Hello, and welcome to Swiss Literature Today, a series showcasing contemporary literature from Switzerland. This series is made possible with kind support from the Consulate General of Switzerland in New York and the Swiss Arts Council Pro Helvetia. In this episode, host Andrew Singer speaks with Swiss Cameroonian author Max Loebe about his novel A Long Way from Douala, out in English translation by Ross Schwartz from Hope Road Publishing in 2021. Andrew began by asking him how he came to Switzerland from Cameroon.
Oh, I already had a part of my family here in Switzerland. And at the age of 18, because, you know, I had my high school certificate when I was 16, so a little bit earlier. And when I was 18, my parents asked me if I wanted to go to Switzerland to continue my studies in the Italian part of Switzerland. And I was very happy. Can you just imagine an African guy being asked if he wants to go to Europe to pursue his studies? You know, I was very happy and I said yes. And I came to Switzerland, I think it was in 2004. And ever since I said that, I don't want to go back, in Africa, like, for now, maybe later when I will be a little bit older than now. Yeah.
For the benefit of our listeners who may not know Switzerland so well, when you say the Italian part of Switzerland, what do you mean? And does that mean that you also speak Italian?
Yeah. I speak fluently Italian, and I think I even speak a better Italian than English, actually, because I did my bachelor degree in communication sciences in at Lugano University, and I wrote my my subject, my everything I did my studies is in Italian, and so there are some concepts that for me are easier to tell in Italian than even in French. You know, and after that, I kept going in Ticino because I have my family there. I have my sister living in Lugano, and I have never stopped practicing Italian. And I have a lot of friends that are Italophony, and together we can speak. Yeah.
And when did you first get the writerly bug? When did you start writing?
Oh, that is a big question because, you know, I will not tell you like some of my colleagues that I know that will tell you, oh, I started writing when I was 4 years old or even from the womb of my mom. No, I will not tell you that. I think that I started writing as far as I can remember now. Maybe I was 14, 16, so almost at university, and I was writing some little tales, you know, African tales, the kind of things I grew up with. And it's just when I came to Europe, after Lugano, after the Italian part of Switzerland, I kept writing during all that time. And it's just when I went to Lausanne to do my master, that one day I was walking through the corridor of the university and I saw like, an advertisement saying, if you have some text, please send them to the competition, Le Concours de Nouvelles. So I sent my text, but I was not that comfortable with the idea of sending my text, because I knew that the French that I was using as material to produce my text was completely different, and I had like a kind of not self-esteem, but you have the complex of inferiority, thinking that your French, your language, your material is not good, it's not a good quality. And thank God I won the competition. It was the Lausanne University Literature Prize. And then I jumped into literature and I published few years later, Ton of Rudeban. And it was just like, it was just like a rocket.
Speaking of prizes, I know that an earlier novel of yours called The Confidences won the Amadou Kourouma Prize. What was that like? How did that come about?
Are you talking about the content of the book or the fact of having the prize?
If you can tell us a little about both of those, yeah.
Okay. About the contents of the book, first of all, I was very happy to have the Nkrumah Prize, because of course, Ahmadu Nkrumah is an author that I definitely admire, and he's very inspiring for me. The contents of the book, with confidence, my third novel, I tried to go back. I mean, I went back to Cameroon on the path of Ruben Umniobe. He was the leader of the War of Independence of Cameroon. And the fact is that I was very shocked to know that I was born in Cameroon. I grew up there. I did all my school there. Then I started university in Cameroon. And almost never have I had any information about the War of Independence of Cameroon. And this is a serious problem, you know. It's just when I was in Geneva one day that they were presenting a book, Cameroon with K, because just to recall people that are listening to us, that Cameroon was a German colony, and then it became a territory of France and England. So that big book of university researchers from France, when I went to the presentation of that book, I discovered something. I mean, it was just unbelievable for me to know that I was born in a country and I grew up there, and never I had something really an information about a very important historical event. All what I knew, it was just that we had events and nobody was supposed to talk about that. And then I picked up my backpack, and I took my flight ticket. I went back to Cameroon. I went in the Bassa area in the forest to see, as you used to say, you know, in Cameroonian French, I want to see it with my feet. I go there directly down, and I met a woman, a very old woman, who was like a survivor of the war. And she told me her story, but her small story in the big story of the War of Independence of Cameroon. So for me, it's a very important book, Confidence. Confidence also for transmission for the young generations, because I have younger brothers and sisters who are living in Cameroon and they study over there. And can you imagine that we are in 2021 and they still don't know anything about that? Because it's not program, it's not shadowed in the school program. So it's a huge problem. And I try just with my language, with our French, with our tropicalized, Cameroonized French, with our Creole, to tell that story. And having the Nkrumah Prize, Nkrumah Literature Prize for that book was a great, great, great honor. But just let the honor aside and let us talk about the depth, about the topic. The most important thing is the topic, is how are we going to transmit that story, not for people to make war again, but to avoid just some things that had already happened in the past.
It may well be that just in this exact moment now, there can be an opportunity to further dialogue and understanding about some of these colonial experiences in Africa. If I understand rightly, one fruit of the internationalizing of the Black Lives Matter movement right now is that just very recently the head of Belgium finally, I think, formally apologized for what happened in the Democratic Republic of Congo previously.
Yeah, definitely. You know, you are asking me too many questions in just one. Black Lives Matter is something that really touched me. It's really important to have this kind of movement today of revendication of, I mean, you know, to think about being black, like what it is to be a black. But I will first say, I'm a little bit disappointed to know that every time that the whole world should talk about a topic and consider it's an important topic, it must come from the US. I'm sorry, I'm not the first one to write about these topics of Black people, of independence, of post-colonial studies and everything. We have a huge literature with Mongo Beti, with the Chinua Achebe, but let's just talk about the Francophone ones. Mongo Beti and, for example, Henri Lopez. You have plenty of them who wrote about those topics, about the topic of colorism, of racism. But nobody, it's just as if nobody wants to hear us, to hear the shout of our heart, from our heart. And when we have something coming from America, then it can spread everywhere in the world. Then the video that we have watched coming from the US with George Floyd, I mean, you are American, you are not American, you are African, you are yellow, you are green, you are blue, you cannot watch that video and feel like, oh, wow, it's so excited. We were all shocked by that video. And for the first time in my life, I've been living in Switzerland for almost, I don't know, 14, 17 years. I have never seen such a lot of people going down to march against racism. For that, I think, yeah, it's really important. It was impressive. It was wow, really. And I cannot just stop thanking people for that. Also, if there was like the end of the lockdown, so okay, let's put it all together like this. But I think the most important thing is really to think about what it is to be Black nowadays, because it's not conceivable, it's not acceptable, it's really, I don't know, ugly to think that today, me, Max Lobby, that I was born in 86 of the last century, that I still have to go on the street to just say that I'm a Black guy, I'm the son of my mom. I don't know if you understand what I'm saying. It's such a pity. I thought that today I could have walked on the street being a gay Black guy without having to shout it again, to revendicate it again, to claim it again, and to ask to people to accept me the way I am. How is that going to be for the next generation? Is that going to be the same war, the same fight that we had with the Malcolm X, with Luther King, with Baldwin, with Toni Morrison, and that me today, again, I have to do that? No, I want to write about something else. Confidence, I wrote it for Cameroonian people first, for Cameroonian young people, for them to know their story, to know what has happened, what have happened. And now, for the white people, let me tell it like that, because even Switzerland will say, oh, we were not really in those, you know, in those colonial stories, but they were, because Mumia were assassinated in Geneva. So today, I just want to live like peacefully, to talk about stuff peacefully without anger, and to live like, yeah, like a colorblind guy. You know, you might be white, blue, yellow, Negro, whatever you want. It's just like a tree. On a tree, you have good and bad fruits. And this is all what I want to have, you know. I don't want to go out on the streets again to fight for the Black rights, the Black people rights.
Yes, of course. It's a very, very long, very painful and difficult struggle. But I do hope that it is moving forward. And I do hope that your wishes for a future generation come to pass. And it's a lot of work, but this is the right work to be doing. So I'm sure many people are grateful for what you're doing. Now you have a new novel out in English, which is a little bit different, maybe. It also deals with Cameroon. But it's about someone who's coming out from there. Do you want to tell us a little bit about this new novel?
Yeah, a long way from Twilight. Yet I'm very happy to have the translation in English. Actually, we were supposed to publish it on the 25th, on the 25th of June 2020, but no need to explain why it has been postponed in the short. Along with Mdwala, the original title in English is Luanda Dwala. I took the same backpack that my friends are used to call Dora the Explorer backpack. I took that and I went in the far north of Cameroon to know about the situation with Boko Haram, because, you know, Cameroon is facing too many problems. But we are not going to talk about all those problems today. Thank God. If not, I'm going to turn mad. But let us just stop on the problem of Boko Haram and religions. Me, I was born in Cameroon, and it's not the first time I say that. In Cameroon, we are Christians, we are Muslims. These are the two monotheist religions. But you have religions, but you have also lots of animist spiritualities. Animist religions, spiritualities that are very important in the country. And you have the third, this is what I wanted to say. We have two monotheist religions, Christianism, Islam, and the third, and I might say even the first religion is football. If you don't play football in Cameroon, you are like, you are like a hobo, or you are like somebody I didn't want to see, you know, an outcast. And me, I couldn't know how to play good football in my childhood. And all those things came back in my mind, and I wanted to tell that, and of course, behind talking about masculinity. Now, the subject, even if you have the title like A Long Way from Douala, it's like we are starting a journey from Douala to somewhere. That somewhere is in the same north, the far north of Cameroon, with the borders with Nigeria and Chad. And in 2016, I think they started having the Boko Haram Islamic activities in Cameroon in 2009, and I was so concerned about that, and I was like, how are my people going to live with those people putting the bomb everywhere on the path, on the streets? And I took my backpack and I decided to go there, you know. And I could have taken the plane from Douala to Marwa in the far west, far north of the country. No, I have decided to make the journey using the taxi bus, using the little communication the little cars that I have to make all the journey from the south to the north of the country, and to discover also the beautiful landscapes of Cameroon on all this, you know. And it was the first time I was seeing all the country from the south to the north. All this to say what? The main topic, one of the main topic about the religion, about the masculinity, about a part or accept the religion, the masculinity, the landscape, the beauty of Cameroon is Boza. The Boza is is a word that the migrants, the immigrants, is the word they shout, putting the V up, saying Boza, victory, when they have reached the European coast of the Mediterranean. And I will not recall you that there are many thousands of them dying today in the waters because they're trying just to reach Europe. Okay, so I said, I consider that everybody living in this, on this world, on this earth today, is aware of that topic. So I consider, really, I just consider that we are all about that subject, that I know that there are some people living in their own bubble and they're not aware of anything. So let us consider it like that. And I said, instead of talking about the path from Cameroon to Nigeria, to Niger, and then you take the Maroki coast boat to go to Spain, or you go to Libya to go to Italy or Greece, I just want to tell the journey of a young guy who has decided to border inside his country. Because let me tell you something. A journey will start always from a point A, and point A is actually from your room, from your bedroom, from your house. Before you reach whatever country else, you will start from your bathroom, from your living room, from your house in your country. And I mean, I wanted to show the path inside Cameroon. How do they travel? How do they try to reach the end, the dream of a best life in Europe, going inside the country, showing the landscape, showing the different types of cultures that we have inside the country, and asking myself, with all these beautiful things, how come do you want to go? How come do you want to leave? And then, if people want to know a little bit more about that, and to have maybe some first elements of answers, they should just read the book.
Why don't we listen to an excerpt from the book, and then we'll talk some more about it. Can you read from the beginning, the first couple of paragraphs in French?
Yeah, in French. Okay, I can try to make it. Because actually, my mother tongue, if I say it like that, my mother tongue is the Cameroonian French, and I like to read in Cameroonian French, but okay, I'll try in the good French. C'est un soir de février 2014 et la saison sèche est bien installée. Même les mouches essoufflées n'ont plus la force de rembuir. Elles voltigent quelques secondes puis s'arrêtent. Il est bientôt minuit à Bonamoussadi, quartier résidentiel au nord de la ville de Douala. Vers la boulangerie Bijou, à quelques blocs de notre maison, des barres ferment dans un bruit métallique de chaînes et de cadenas. Des soulards béguettent. Ils exigent une dernière bière. Sinon, on casse tout ici, là. Les tenancières à la voix fluettent, rigolent et les envoient paître. Allez, dégagez, bande d'ivrognes! L'écho de leur rire retentit comme une stridente sirène de police. À une centaine de mètres, rue centrale, le très fréquenté bar Empereur Bokassa reprend les hits cadencés de la saison. On entend au loin un concert de croissements et le miaulement des chats errants.
It's a February evening in 2014, at the height of the dry season. Even the flies are too exhausted to buzz. They spiral around for a few seconds and then stop. Soon it will be midnight in Bonamoussadi, a residential neighborhood to the north of Douala. Around the Bijou Bakery, a few blocks from our house, bars are closing with a clatter of chains and padlocks. Drunkards bleat for one last beer.
Otherwise we'll smash up this place!
The woman bar owners shriek with laughter and send them packing.
Off with you! Out of here, you drunken fools!
Their laughter sounds like a wailing police siren. 100 meters away, on the main street, the popular Empereur Bokassa bar pounds out the season's hits. You can hear the distant concert of croaking and the mewing of stray cats.
De mon côté, vissé à mon bureau, je prépare mes premiers examens universitaires. Les murs de la chambre sont couverts d'affiches de champions de football, les idoles de mon frère Roger. Je ne reconnais que la photo de notre équipe nationale et celle du célèbre joueur Roger Milla. Quelques trophées en aluminium, des médailles de pacotille et de nombreux maillots que mon frère ne prend pas la peine de ranger. Ces godasses empestent.
Meanwhile, I'm glued to my desk, revising for my first-year university exams. The bedroom walls are plastered with posters of football champions, my brother Roger's idols. I only recognize the photo of our national team, and the one of the legendary Roger Miller. A few aluminum trophies, some cheap medals, and countless sports shirts that my brother can't be bothered to put away. His boots stink.
Notre lit à étage est face au bureau. Ce lit devient de plus en plus étroit pour nos corps qui grandissent. Roger dort sous le plafond. Ses entraînements clandestins l'ont épuisé. De temps en temps, distrait de mes devoirs, je pose un œil sur son visage anguleux. Il ressemble beaucoup à papa. Ils ont le même front haut, les joues creuses et le menton fin. Il ronfle. Je vois ses rêves de star du ballon rond choir dans la bave qui coule de sa bouche entrouverte. Je ressens la compassion pour lui et regrette que papa et maman le forcent à continuer sur une voie qui n'est pas la sienne. Il est né pour le foot, lui. Le regard scintillant et sur un ton enjoué, il me dit souvent « Tu verras !» Tu verras, mon petit, je serai une grande star. Mes transferts coûteront des millions. On m'appellera pour les publicités de chaussures. Adidas, frérot. Adidas. Je finirai par faire la une de Paris Match. Tu verras, mon petit, tu verras.
Our bunk bed is opposite the desk. It's more and more cramped for our growing bodies. Roger's asleep on the top bunk, worn out from his secret training sessions. My mind keeps wandering from my books, and I gaze fondly at his angular face. I can see Pa in him. They have the same high forehead, hollow cheeks, and pointed chin. He's snoring. I can see his dreams of football stardom dissolving in the saliva dribbling from his open mouth. I feel sorry for him and wish that Pa and Ma would stop forcing him down a path that's not right for him. He was born for football. He often tells me, excitedly, his eyes shining, "You'll see, little bro. I'm gonna make it big. My transfers will cost millions. They'll want me to do trainer ads. Adidas, bro, Adidas. I'll end up on the cover of Paris Match. Just you wait. Just you wait."
Soudain, la voix hystérique de maman dans la chambre d'à côté. « Claude! Non, Claude, tu ne peux pas me faire ça. Non, lève-toi. Lève-toi maintenant et marche au nom puissant de Jésus. » Roger, devant moi, ouvre brusquement les yeux. « Tu as entendu ça? » Comme un seul homme, nous nous précipitons. Là, nous voyons papa étendu. Il respire très faiblement, difficilement. Difficile même de savoir s'il sent encore ses membres. Il bouge à peine. Une partie de son visage est paralysée. Son œil gauche est beaucoup plus petit, fermé. L'autre, globuleux. Sa bouche tordue ne s'ouvre plus qu'à droite.
Suddenly, Ma's voice, hysterical from the next bedroom. Claude! No! Claude, you can't do this to me! No! Get up right now! Get up and walk! In the name of the Lord Jesus! Roger's eyes snap open. Did you hear that? As one, we rush in to find Pa lying on the bed. His breathing is very shallow. Hard to know whether he can even still feel his legs. He's barely moving. Part of his face is paralyzed, his left eyes shrunken and closed, and the other one's bulging. His mouth is all lopsided and only opens on the right side.
Max, let me ask you about the language in this novel. So you spoke about the various religions in Cameroon as well. There's an incredible multitude of languages, more than 200 indigenous languages. I understand you had some fun with this book in that you've used a lot of words which are considered cam franglais. Is that right? Can you explain what that is?
Exactly. It's cam franglais is, you know, colonization. is, because we have the neo-colonization, is a stupid bad thing, actually. It's one of the worst things that African people have had heard in their life. It's like somebody coming in your land and decide to take everything and ask you to pay a tax on what you don't know. Anyway, we all know what is that. And the only thing, when I try to see all the shapes of that topic, of that topic of colonization, the only maybe positive thing that I can see in colonization is a language, because I could have not spoken English now or discussed in English with you if I were not from Cameroon. So I'm from a bilingual country where we have the possibility, if you have the means, you know, if you go to school, you have the possibility to speak the two languages, the two official languages that are French and English. But we're not living in France. it means a lot for me. We are living in Cameroon. It means that we have inherited that language, and we have decided, consciously or not, to transform it, to adapt it. It's just normal, you know. You cannot come in Africa with a big coat, a snow coat, and you keep it like that in Cameroon where you have 40 degrees at the shadow. No, you are going to remove maybe one, two parts of your coat in order to adapt it to the climate. So we have adapted that French, and today we have the Confranglais, and maybe it's also an act of resistance. But I think that it's a way for us to say, okay, we have French, but we have our French. We have our French that we can speak together with our accent, with our words, with images and many other things. And it's the same thing with the pidgin English of Cameroon. When somebody tells you, Nahaona, Nawetina, you know you come out from it. It's funny for me, but, you know, these are political issues. These are political questions, because the language is something that you use not just to communicate, but to understand what the person has in his brain, to understand the way he constructs a thought, a pensée, in order to see the world. We see the world, we represent to ourselves the world with a language. And it's just not fair to think that I will think and represent to myself the world with English, with French, with German, with Italian. No, I also want to have the possibility to represent the world to myself with another language, with my Creole, Confranglais, with Bassa language of my ancestors, and everything, or almost, or something will change in the representation that I have from the world that surrounds me. So for me, it's really important, the Confranglais. We were talking a while ago about confidence. I wanted to give out that sad story using that language for my people to understand that language, to understand that story with your language. How far can you go in a country and pretending, showing something new to the people, to the inhabitant of that country, and you don't speak their language? It's a little bit crazy. No. I try to use our language, because every time when I write, the first people I think of is my Cameroonian people, even though I know that they are going to be the last readers. The first readers are Western people. And for me, it's not a way to colonize them, like a way back to colonization, like to colonize white people. No, it's just to build bridges. You know, to build between people. How can we be BLM? How can we be Black Lives Matter if we don't read what's so-called African literature, if we don't understand their language, if we don't understand their history? So it's everything that I do with my rights, with my writings, it's political, from the topic to the way I decide to write them, to the characters I take. You know, I did politics at university, and I'm very, very interested in that. I'm not a politician. I don't forget that a novel is not a report of Human Rights Watch. I don't forget that a novel is not a report of Amnesty International. I just know that a novel is, first of all, creation is art. But behind art, behind creation, behind literature, we have a lot to say. We have diverse, different propositions to give to people that thought during all their life, know that it was just one way of seeing life. So I want just to give them some new lens, to maybe to give them my glasses, for them to see a little bit light, a little bit pinky, a little bit black, a little bit gay, a little bit this. But I know exactly what I'm doing.
Can you give us an example of Cam Franglais, which you used in the novel, and what it means?
From the beginning, you cannot put directly the Cam Franglais. If not, you're going to rebuke some readers, some Western people, some white people. They will say, oh my God, this is not French. What about French people? You know, they can be linguistical versus linguistically versus. They can say, no, I don't want this, blah, 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 blah. So it's just at a certain point, maybe from the second chapter, that I start putting really the Cam Franglais. But at the beginning, I don't want to shock them. For example, there's chapter 2, where you have the celebration of the certificates of Roger and Jean. And you have this sentence, let me read maybe. Notre chef de quartier, Pablo Monod, et sa femme étaient aux premières loges. Pour rien au monde, ils n'auraient raté cette réception. Fallait les voir, maman. Ils portaient leurs plus beaux vêtements traditionnels, lui une chemise blanche sur laquelle il avait noué au niveau des hanches un pagne noir soyeux. Elle, une robe très ample, longue jusqu'aux chevilles et aux manches larges, le kabangondo. Lorsque papa leur avait fait une remarque bienveillante sur leur tenue, Ma Bomono, pas Bomono, Béa avait répondu, ah, mon frère Moussima, c'est pas tous les jours qu'on a des bacheliers d'à peine 17 ans dans ce quartier. Papa avait eu un sourire jaune, tandis que maman complimentait Ma Bomono sur son kabangondo. Merci, oh, merci beaucoup, ma soeur. C'est pour le bac que mon fils avait répliqué Ma Bomono en découvrant ses dons du bonheur. Tout le monde était là, même les femmes que ma mère qualifiait matin, midi, soir de sorcières jalouses de son mariage, les plus jeunes d'entre elles, les panthères. Elles étaient très peu vêtues. Ma Bomono s'en était étonnée. C'est quelle façon de s'habiller ça, hein? On dirait que le tissu est fini au marché.
Our local chief, Pa Bomondo, and his wife had ringside seats. They wouldn't have missed that party for anything in the world. You should have seen them. They wore their finest traditional costumes. He, a white shirt with a silky black panier tied around his hips. She, a voluminous ankle-length dress with wide sleeves, the kabanagondo. When Pa complimented them on their outfits, the delighted Pa Bomondo had replied, oh, my brother Musima, in this neighborhood it's not every day that we see boys of barely 17 obtain their baccalaureate, is it? Pa laughed grudgingly, while Ma admired Ma Bomondo's kabanagondo. Thank you very much, sister. It's for our son Jean's baccalaureate, Ma Bomondo replied, revealing the gap between her teeth. Everyone was there, even the women my mother described morning, noon, and night as witches envious of her marriage. The youngest of them, the Panthers, wore little clothing. Ma Bamondo was shocked.
What is this way of dressing? Anyone would think the market was out of fabric.
I'm sorry. Because this is a language of it's a language of gossip, you know. This is Kampongle, you know. The way of saying things, to say the Panthers, to say matin midi soir. It's not a French that you will see. It's not the normal French to say to have that A at the end of the sentences, or to say Jesus, oh Jesus Christo, oh this, you know, this kind of expressions that will put like pepper, some spice in my soup, in my literature soup, so that I will have something that will recall me some souvenir of my childhood when I was with my grandmother, you know.
So you've got some colorful clothing in that passage. I guess a Caba Negondo, it's a kind of ankle-length dress. And also in that passage, you have a pagne, is that right? It's kind of a long colored cloth that's wrapped around the body.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little more about the characters and the plot in this novel.
Oh, the characters. The first character that I would like to present is the narrator, is Jean. I don't know how they put the letter Jean in English, in the English version. Jean is a young guy who is very close to his mom. He's a narrator of the book, first of all. He's very close to his mom, so he's very Christian. He's also like the little preferred one of the mom, because he's very clever and he has the possibility to go to university very early. And the second is the brother of Jean, Roger. He's a dreamer. He's a football player dreamer. He wants to go to Europe to play football. Also, it was a way for me to say that everybody that wants to go to Europe, bullseye, using the Mediterranean, they are not poor people, though. They are not poor people of the force. They can come from the middle class families, like this family. And you have what we call in Africa, the brother from another womb, from another mother, which is Simon. And he's very important. He's a very important character in that book. People might not see him. He seems very transparent because he's not the character, he's not the narrator, and he's not even the brother of the narrator. But he's the one taking all the decisions, actually. He's the one who would decide to go and follow Roger on his way to Europe. Simon, the brother from another womb, the brother from another mother, who have decided to say, okay, let's go and look for him. These are the main three characters, those three guys. And we have, I ask a lot of questions with those three characters. It's the question of masculinity, the question of friendship, lovers, because sometimes, you know, me, I don't know for people, but when I was a young guy, a young teenage, you have some brothers like that from another mother. He can be the neighbor, he can be a friend from school, and you look up to him. But you're very young, and in the African atmosphere or context, where you don't know exactly when you're 12 years old or 13 years old, you don't know that what you're feeling might be homosexuality, but you look up to the person because he's already bigger, he's much more a man, he's wearing a belt, a mustache, and he can shave, you know. And you're asking to yourself, when you're going to do that? When are you going to do that? You too. When are you going to get old enough to do that? But looking at the self of that, at the body of that young, beautiful man a little bit older than you, and then you start having some thoughts, but you're not sure of what you're feeling. You think that it's just maybe friendship, it's just maybe the brotherhood, it's maybe love, but you don't want to admit it. And this is all the shape of this kind of relationship that I wanted to show also with this book. But telling me, asking me the plot is very different. It's very difficult because if you ask, it's just as if you were asking me what the book is all about. It's about many things. You can take it from the side that I've just developed about the masculinity, about the way a young guy can cope with that problem, a young teenager with that problem, with that question. But you can take also the religion with Boko Haram. That one, I don't want to develop it a lot here, because anyway, people will know that the book, one of the main topics of the book is Boko Haram and terrorism and fanatism, religious fanatism, because the mother is also fanatic. She is a kind of terrorist, a Christian terrorist. And the last thing is just the Cameroon. It's just the country as a country. All the good and the bad sides of the country, corruption, the solidarity in the families, the religions, and all this, you know. I just invite people to discover the book in English. And we are going to have a lot of meetings and programs to talk about every single topic of the book. But for now, I prefer to put in front the masculinity and how to develop the shape of the young guy becoming, discovering himself gay, how to show the different feelings he can go through.
Thank you. Yes, certainly. Can you tell us, what are you working on now? What's next for you coming out in Switzerland?
In February, I will have La Promesse de Safa l'Excellence. La Promesse de Safa l'Excellence, let's call it the promise of his Fal Excellency. Of course, people will see the palace. Somebody say that I'm very sexual or very sexy. I won't say no. I won't say no, because, yeah, I think that sex is something that can help us, that helps me to show our society in a different way. For example, if we say La Promesse de Safa l'Excellence, that is going to be published next year in February, I think in the same month with A Long Way from Douala, but it's going to be published in French, I was just like, for me, it's not enough today to say His Excellency, His Excellency President. You know the formula they are used to use to talk about the presidents, or His Honorable, or this. I was like, His Fal Excellency, because there was a lot about phallus. Phallus is not just a penis, it's not just a cock. Phallus is power. You have women that can be phallic. You have men that can be not phallic at all. So it's really working with the language, creating the language. I use the language like, you know, as if it were the clay. And I try to make like a pottery and to have a good pot, maybe strange, maybe weird. But I always try to make myself understood. And I think that, yeah, in that book that is coming in Switzerland in February, people will discover a new language, a mix of Creole, Cameroonian Kamfangle, a classic language, Bassa. It's a book that I wanted to be, like a dance book, a book that we can dance, and a book that we can dance, a book with a lot of fairy tales, with a lot of erotic, allegoric tales, all that to talk about the tyranny.
Wonderful. Max, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you. And you know, I'm always available to talk about literature and even a little bit more if you want.
Wonderful. I may take you up on that.
This has been Swiss Cameroonian novelist Max Loba talking about his novel A Long Way from Douala, out in English translation by Ross Schwartz from Hope Road Publishing in 2021.
You've been listening to Swiss Literature Today, a series showcasing contemporary literature from Switzerland. Support for this series comes from the Consulate General of Switzerland in New York and the Swiss Arts Council Pro Helvetia. This series is executive produced by Traffic at Europe Radio. Thanks for listening.